Hello and welcome to Reframing the Future, the HGKC podcast series where we talk to business people about their experiences and challenges of building successful businesses. I am Kim Jones and I am delighted to welcome today Gavin Jones, founder and MD of Elixil, an innovative digital agency. They create engaging digital experiences for their clients, customers and for their people. As a highly collaborative company, Elixil works with others to deliver exceptional digital solutions for their clients, and we're going to hear about some of that during our conversation today. We'll also be talking about some of the strategies Gavin has adopted to grow his own business and to share some insights, really about people and teams and how he's helped them develop design thinking for a more disrupted digital future. Welcome, Gavin.
Hiya, how are you doing?
Great. My colleague Jane Short introduced us, recognising our shared passions for all things digital. So that would be a good start to tell us a bit about yourself and where this journey started for you.
It's been an interesting one for me. I mean, I've always been kind of very much focused on the creative and design side. The business itself, obviously, is it founded from university. So we all met and studied on the course at university, which is a brilliant experience for us. But actually started my experience with digital before that. I was actually studied a BTC in art and design at college. The common joke is that I was a designer that couldn't draw, or the artist that couldn't draw. So I always liked building things with my hands, and I had this vision that if I go to university and study digital design, I'd be focusing more on building like 3D models and that side of things. So I always had a load of ideas. My capability to deliver was not necessarily as strong as my ability to kind of have visions and have ideas. So when I had the opportunity to go to university and meet a really amazing group of people, it kind of became a natural bond and a natural opportunity there to create an organization that worked. We spent 4 years studying together. It was great kind of because being able to create ideas, have a team of people who are strong designers, strong developers, who had the ability to build the ideas that you have is something that I really enjoyed. I really liked to have that team available.
Build on that strength of having strong conceptual skills, but not necessarily the execution. And that's why, you know, finding a good team of people so that you all work to your strengths is a really important part of building a good business and knowing your own limitations.
Definitely, 100%. I think their core skills, having those skills in place, definitely we kind of fell into a natural pattern, our natural roles kind of in regards to how the team was structured. And we had the opportunity in our final year to kind of do that kind of the business course or the business module in our final year. And that kind of helped to solidify those structures in place. And actually we started the business before even finishing graduating. We did it in our final year. So straight out into the world, going straight into an employment as a business owner, which is, I think a lot of people think it's a risky strategy.
But I think also if you know it's what you want. I mean, one of the things I really found when I used to run an incubator for university was that a lot of people know really from the beginning that this is what they need, a self-directed future, that they're never really going to be able to be the model employee or get what they want from work. You know, they're driven in a different way right from the beginning, and you can see that in yourself. So kind of set the scene a bit. When did you start at Elixil then? You know, what year?
So we started in 2012, so eight years in now. So obviously built going from strength to strength. We went through many programs from starting the business from a few, I think the key thing for us was finding ways of finding new funding and new opportunities to try and increase the revenue in the business. So from working directly with, we're working actually directly with clients and agencies. So even from the start, we had the capability and we were delivering work for people like JP Morgan, Toyota, Avato, which is a large financial organization. So working directly with those large organizations was a really good kind of capability builder for us, but also kind of evidence to us that we had the skills and capabilities to deliver those kind of high grade projects for those kind of that level of client, and really helped kind of raise those aspirations of what we could be doing with the business as well.
So tell us a bit about the work that the firm does then. You know, what kind of things do you create?
So it is as varied as it sounds. So last year we built a high score system for a water slide. So looking at trying to find new ways of engaging people who visit water parks and leisure centres to try and make it more of an enriched experience rather than just going there to swim. It's about creating competition. So it's all about people and engagement and that side of things. And we're currently in the process of designing a CRM system for a large insurer. So that's, again, it's about people. It's how do you help the team to kind of better manage their relationships with their customers. So it's kind of working out from the cause of what those people need. How are they doing things at the moment? How can we use technology to improve that experience or enable that kind of process to be a lot smoother for everyone in the team?
So is that taking digital experiences and digital journeys into the real world as well? So when the customer finally arrives at the...
It's definitely about merging both. I think my biggest... we're a weird case in a lot when people talk to us. A lot of people come to us and say, oh, digital is going to take over everything. We should be driving digital and be digital first. Actually, no, you should be people first. And there's so many stories I hear of people and organisations and councils kind of going and driving the digital agenda and ultimately forgetting about the people who don't actually want to be on that train. You need to think about those people and work at how you're going to meet those needs of people who don't want to engage with digital. It's not about educating them to be more digital. If they don't want to be there, you're going to have to create something which meets their needs and make sure they're still catered for.
So you must have to work with others, so collaborate with lots of different technology partners and capabilities here to deliver such a range of projects. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Edexo itself we're part of a wider development group. So our commercial director has a mobile app development house in Hampshire and also has a development house in Warsaw as well. So we're, in regards from a technical delivery point of view, the team in Warsaw is about 400 plus developers. So from a capability point of view, we can scale from small scale kind of prototyping projects all the way up to enterprise level delivery. And we also run a digital network in Plymouth as well of digital and creative people who have a really good wide ranging skill set from photography and design all the way through to VR and AR. So it means that we can kind of draw on our own internal capabilities, but also bring people in from our local network to kind of use them and use their skills and expertise and basically be stronger because of what we can offer our clients. We become kind of the digital team for those clients to go to, and then we bring in the expertise rather than try and do everything ourselves. We bring those experts in so the client's getting the best possible kind of skills and capabilities they need.
You just said earlier about it being very much about designing and thinking about those processes. So I know you use design thinking and it frames a bit about how you approach projects and your business. So tell us a little bit about that.
I think the design thinking approach is something we were introduced to by our now head of UX, Rob Breed. So Rob Breed was at IBM for 20 years and he introduced us to design thinking as a process 4 or 5 years ago. And since we discovered it and worked out the power it could have, we've embedded it and been working with Rob to embed that as part of our process. And what it allows us to do is, it's not, design thinking allows you to reframe the challenge around the people that it impacts. The power of that is you're designing and building products and services around the needs and problems of people, which means you're going to create something which is going to have real impact because you're actually building something that sorts a real need. The second powerful aspect of that is the process is about bringing people together to help solve those problems. So we work with organizations. So one example, last year, we were working with an organization who'd just gone through a merger. They had a department down here in Devon and Cornwall and an organization in Somerset based, and they'd merged the two organizations together. So usually when we go into a room, we expect to be the only strangers in the room. It's not always necessarily the case. So with this client, most of the team, although they're part of the same organization, never actually met each other. But they're all dealing with the same people. They're all dealing with the same customers. So by bringing them together and actually focusing on who those customers are and what challenges that those guys are going through, the team in Somerset might have already solved some of those problems that the team in Devon might still be battling with. But also they might both be also trying to tackle the same challenges, the same problems. And by focusing them around the core person, which is their single point of similarity, they can start designing solutions together that are actually going to strengthen both parts of those organization. So it's a really powerful process to go from that side of things.
That's a really great example as well of that design thinking. It's all about the people. And kind of that really brings me to my next question. Being talent rich is one of the key defining strategies of high performing businesses. And it's one of the things that's come out of Accenture's pivot to the future thinking. You operate in a very highly competitive and fast changing market in the digital space. And the current environment has encouraged us to all embrace new ways of working too, throughout the lockdown and what our new normal will look like. So how are you rethinking and adapting for the agency of the future?
I think for us, we've always kind of liked to think of ourselves as being fairly aware, or trying to be as aware as possible as what's coming around the corner. With the agency makeup anyway, we're a mixture of in-office and remote working. So a couple of our team work across the UK. So Ed's based in Hampshire, Rob's based in Swindon, Natalia's based in Cornwall. So we have people who are spread around the UK as a nature of the beast. And I think in Rob's case, for example, it's very, you know, if you want to find really strong talent and you want to find people, they're not always going to be in your locality. You have to have the flexibility to be able to go, wait a second, if there's someone here who's got the skills and capability that have a massive impact for our business, what can we do to make sure that we can make them feel comfortable and confident part, as part of the team? And that's not necessarily dragging them however many hundred miles to relocate or even dragging them however many miles to have meetings every single week. So we have a structure in place that allows us to have those keeping in touch days. It's really important for our team to have face-to-face times when it's possible. But it's about managing the frequency of that. And because of our location, we do a lot of remote working. So we run our workshops by video calls, both kind of whether we're working directly with client or we're doing internal collaborative type projects. And on the hiring point of view, I think you have to look at the situation and go, when does it make sense to make a hire? And when does it make sense to use the talent that's around you, whether that's in your city or whether that's in the country or the people that you know? I think in the current climate that we're in, I think a lot of people who have expanded or grown their team by a huge amount have suddenly found themselves with a team that's way too bloated and are finding themselves in really challenging times. But by keeping lean and bringing in the skills that we need, but also using the businesses around us, we can be really adaptable and rather than trying to bring people in and making them adapt to do more things, we can keep them to the skill base that they've got and then bring people in who specialize. And that by doing that, we can be a lot leaner, but also have people who have those really core skills who do, and they spend their days and their lives doing what they love and what they're really good at, which is a really important thing for us.
Have you had to use lots of new tools, or have you been able to use what you already had as ways of working because you're already working remotely?
I think we've had to use more tools mainly because of other people using new tools. Yeah. So it's more a case of the amount of different video platforms that I'm having. I could be on three or four different video platforms in a single day just because different clients and different people are using different tools, but mainly from that side of things. In regards to the collaboration side, so we use Miro pretty much for all our workshops and our collaborations and that side of things, and we have them for a while, and it's just a case of trying to work out it's more about putting the processes in place as to how to make that a stronger platform to use with our clients. And those tools, we're already seeing those tools adapting and building to improve, to fit around the situation. So as people start to work more remote, those tools have, although they're built for that kind of practice, have worked in that way. I mean, another example of that is simple Google Docs. So when we were building our proposals, we used to use something called InDesign, which would always rely on our designer to kind of design those processes and design those proposals, which is not very adaptable. So we made the shift a few years ago to do all our proposals in slides. And what that allows us to do is, if I want someone to check something or I want someone in the team to look at it, they could be making changes and adapting our proposal while I'm still working on other parts of that proposal. And I have three or four team members working on something at the same time, which is a beautiful thing to be able to do.
Very efficient. Having replical processes that you know are sound and you haven't got to keep checking on them, and it gives everyone confidence that no matter where they are, it'll support them to do the work.
Yeah, definitely.
That you get huge insights from the work you do, particularly around engaging teams, one of the things we've just been talking about here. So let's explore how businesses can be more innovative and focus on their teams to adapt and shape the services they offer by sharing some of the insights and the learnings that you've had over these last 8 years.
I think the main thing for me is trust. I think the biggest barrier to growth as a business is trust. I think I'm quite lucky in the fact that because I started with this challenge is starting with four founders, in regards to the scale of the business from starting, but it instantly puts you in a situation where you have to trust the people around you. The challenge mainly for those people, I would say, is for the people who started and to find businesses on their own, who are kind of, it's their baby, that they're sole ownership of. And I think that can be replicated in organizational structures as well. So we see it quite often where there is someone who's at the head of the table in department who finds it difficult to let go and spread that kind of that trust to trust to their team. And instantly it's stifling the capability to adapt and improve what they're doing. So I'd say be more trusting of the people around you is probably the main thing I would say as a key kind of mechanism, and put processes in place to try and make sure that if you do want to check they're doing things, then put processes in place which aren't kind of overbearing, but also allow you to measure the impact that you're having. I think coming back to that kind of that design thinking methodology again, spend some time getting out of your own head is probably one of the other things as well. There's so many times when you'll make decisions based off some assumptions, and being aware, and the key thing is being aware of what is an assumption.
So do you do a bit more group decision making as a leadership team then, so that you can share that as a process?
It's a balance between forcing bureaucracy and making sure you're making efficient decision making. I think it's about being open to listening more than anything. I think it's going to be a key thing, and don't change your mind.
Yeah. That's a really hard one, isn't it? Because people get very committed to a course of action and they have to see it through to the bitter end.
Yeah, I think it's being stern enough to know when you need to stick to a path, but being open enough to be able to make and adapt that decision when new evidence comes in. I think, and then that's the thing, it's when new evidence arises or someone else who might have a little bit more experience to you saying, actually, there might be a better way of doing things. And that almost comes back to that kind of that talent rich aspect as well, is you will be in a situation where when you're hiring, you're going to be hiring people who are going to have more experience than you. And actually, you should be in that situation. You should be hiring people who expand and improve the business. So if you're going to make decisions, use those people who maybe have more experience than you to be able to make those kind of help you make those better decisions or make those pivots and make those changes. I think over the last 8 years, from a business point of view, I think I've grown in confidence, and but that confidence is not, it's being careful to make that confidence not arrogance at the same time. I'm confident enough in myself to be happy enough to change my mind or change my decision making process, because it's not about me making myself look better. It's about making the right decisions, and I think that's something that I think everyone has to grow to a position to be able to make if they're going to make a stronger business, and a stronger business that's going to last.
I think that sort of humility, keeping real with the people, and that's having a people-centered approach in your business, it does keep you more grounded, because it's not about the product and actually pushing or we do apps or we do this. It's really about what are the solutions for the right thing for this client right now, for their people. Yeah. And have we got the people to do it ourselves?
Yeah, definitely.
Haven't. I mean, get them. Do we do it through our own? Do we do it through collaboration? You know, how do we actually get to that?
Yeah, and I think it definitely makes things more challenging when winning work, because if someone comes to us with an idea, we're not just saying, this is what it's going to cost, let's just build it. We question and go, is this the right thing to do? Are you actually going to get the value back from building this? And whether that's through driving sales, whether that's through driving efficiency, whether that's through better improved marketing, are you going to get that value back from the product that you're going to be investing into this? And actually, is this the right thing to be focusing your time on, or is it just a distraction, or is it a plaster that's a sticking plaster that's covering a problem that's going to become bigger later?
In agencies, that's a really important point, isn't it? It's because a lot of people do so much work for free as part of that process up front.
Yeah.
You're trying to work out, you know, will this be a profitable piece of work in the long term, given that our process about the upfront, that contracting understanding position is perhaps even more time heavy, because we've got to work out, can we deliver the sort of project that we think that they're looking for in terms of benefits and outcomes?
I think there is a lot of time up front, and I think the biggest challenge with digital itself is just selling something that people aren't necessarily holding their hands either, and at the moment people still struggle to kind of visualize. We're going through that process at the moment where we're talking to clients who are looking to build products and services that are going to go to investors or going to go to get additional funding. And they're trying to sell their idea, but it's not visualized. So it's about us going, okay, well, actually, how can we support you to prototype that? How can we support you to design something that makes that an easier thing to visualize? Yeah. And that's kind of trying to solve those key problems for those organizations or those entrepreneurs as well.
So even if it's a storyboard at the most primitive end, even if it's in an animation or something later on, but you have to start with some kind of principles to get the concepts over, because not everybody has got visualization skills. A lot of people, it's about the way they're made.
I think that's another thing that a lot of people aren't aware of. One of my friends that I went to university with, he's got a condition which means he can't form images in his mind. Yeah. I think part of that, and another thing, is that awareness of those challenges and those capabilities. We see it all the time when we're looking at, obviously we work a lot on the user experience side of things. Whenever I'm looking at, one of the biggest annoyances is parking payment machines. There's one specifically in the city where I'm just looking at those buttons and I'm just going, they're the most confusing set of buttons I've ever seen. Like, V, is a V an arrow? Is that void? Is that validate? Is C confirm? Is it clear? Like, it's, and you have to, and also from a colorblindness point of view, you have to be taking that into consideration as well, because sometimes colors don't necessarily translate. So being aware of those different challenges that you're going to think when you're designing an experience is going to be really important. In the same, both when you're designing experience and also when you're pitching that experience as well. It's all about people.
It is all about people. I think that's probably a great point for us to end on. We both are in harmony about that. We both think it's all about the people. You can have the best products and the best innovation and the best setup, but unless you've got the right people and you're doing it with the people in mind, you do not get the overall impact of that. So thank you very much for sharing your insights and the experience of Alexcel to date. I'm sure it's got a fabulous future ahead. And we will be putting this up on our website on HGKC Podcast. And you will also find wonderful blogs and articles to support this on Gavin's website on Alexcel. And I will give you the web address. It is www.alexcel, and that is spelled elixel.co.uk/blog. So go read. It's a wonderful site full of rich content. Thanks very much, Gavin.
Brilliant. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
You're welcome.